Now, let's talk a little bit about the World Heritage List. You, as you probably know, the World Heritage List is now up to 851 sites, and there are probably between 1 and 2,000 more in waiting on tentative lists.
Yep.
So it's very big. So I guess I have a couple of questions. The first is, what is your understanding of what was the intention at the beginning when the list, the concept of listing was created?
Well, you told me just before this interview that some of those involved right at the start had a very modest perception, maybe only eight or a dozen or so cultural monuments, which I find pretty astonishing. But thinking more in the national side,
the natural side,
I don't think that question was ever very explicitly asked, and certainly wasn't answered, but implicitly was this idea, I think, which is actually you find in that publication that Jeff McNeely produced in, heavens, I should have done the research work before, but it's probably about 1990 or something, his list of World Heritage Sites, and it's a finite list. And I think proponents of that position, strongly upheld by Jim, somewhat more weakly by myself, I think felt that there couldn't be in the natural world, at any rate, an open-ended list. That if there was, then clearly what is uniquely significant about the properties that had outstanding universal value was being undermined. Now, it's very difficult where you draw the line. Mm-hmm. And you can also argue that with advances of science, maybe sites that we did not think were of OUV, if we can use that shorthand, 20 years ago, are now merit that recognition. And to that extent, I suppose, to say an arbitrary list, so we say natural sites only of, I don't know, 250 or something, would probably be artificial. On the other hand, there are certain standards set by the sites that are already on the list, and they provide a kind of benchmark against which future properties should be assessed. And not only the sites that have been added to the list, but those which didn't make it. They provide a kind of, as I say, a benchmark. It's not clear to me that that benchmark can be maintained under the kind of political pressures that the convention's been under. I mean, I would give you the example of the, what's it called, the Trois Pitons?
Yes, the Piton in Saint Lucia,
which was certainly a property which I think all of us in IUCN had fairly grave doubts about. But the political pressure, which we can talk about, no doubt we'll get round to that in due course, was great. And IUCN's technical assessment was, I think, overwhelmed by a set of political arguments. Now, if that then establishes, as it were, a new norm, a new benchmark, which you could say, and I'm sure Jim would certainly say, is lower than what it had been previously, and thereby invites other people to come forward with their own nominations, and even the concept that every nation is entitled to a natural site and a cultural site, which is a rather curious concept, if you start from where we started just a few moments ago, will lead you to quite a lot of sites getting onto a list. And therefore, there is a real tension between maintaining the original concept behind the list, the political pressures on it, and whether or not there is some kind of cap that should be placed in the natural field. I think it would be, as I said, I don't think I would want to say there should be a particular figure, but I think unless the committee helps to uphold, in general, not always, obviously, the rigour that IUCN has tried to apply in this field, the effect will be the devaluation of the list as a whole.
IUCN is actually on record as, there are now 166 natural properties on the list, and IUCN's on record as saying they think 300 is the finite number for natural sites.
Yeah.
I mean, it really raises the question, you know, the committee does have these conversations from time to time about the M word, moratorium, on inscription. It raises that question. I mean, do you think the list should be capped?
Well, moratorium and capping are not quite the same thing, are they? I mean, capping would be setting a statistical limit and saying that there are 300 properties that merit that. Well, I mean, I would certainly want to put an adjective in front of 300. like around about or somewhere within, broadly within that figure. But I'll come back to you and I'll try and answer your question in a moment. But that figure, whether it's 250 or 300 or so forth, is not an arbitrary figure. There's an arbitrary net quality in it, but it's based upon the kind of analysis which IUCN has done on marine sites, on forest sites, on polar sites and so forth, which gives us a handle on how many sites are really of outstanding significance and would merit inclusion. So it is based on that kind of set of global studies, which is not the case, I think, so clearly in much of the cultural field. A moratorium would be about taking breath maybe for 5 years, no new nominations. I think with due notice, that could actually be quite healthy because it would force the committee and the state's parties to think a bit more about management and the better care of the sites that are on the list and capacity building and training and all the other issues, rather than the rather sexy and polarised issue of whether or not a site gets on the list. But I would just say from UK experience that the effect of that would be quite dramatic in closing down a lot of the enthusiasm which is behind the convention. Mm-hmm. So there's a downside of that too. If it was to be done, I think it would have to be done after quite a long period of preparation, and there'd have to be a very clear programme of work that was to be done in the interim. It wouldn't just be business as usual. It would be to use that breathing space mm-hmm. for some good purpose.